RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday, August 6th edition of the Landry Football Podcast, part of the Radio Influence family. We're going to pick up our X's and O's series and break down pass rush, understanding a little bit more about the pass rush, and going to get you all schooled on that and understand different skill sets, types. We're going to get into that. Also, got a couple of questions that we're going to get. And remember that if you have a question, contact us here at the Landry, at LandryFootball.com. Hit contact Chris and we'll address it for you right here on this podcast. Remind you what we got going on at LandryFootball.com as the season is fast approaching. Breaking down the game inside the film room. All the games, previews, reviews, we're going to have that covered for you. A lot of interesting things that will give you a perspective that you really can't get anywhere else. So we're really excited about that. Make sure that you check out the scouting season sale on that. We've got a depth chart grades that we've got up on the website, and we're finishing that up this week as preseason week number one, full week number one, Hall of Fame game is in the books. The rest of or the week one is going to take place this week. So you get a feel for how each player grades on the depth chart of each team as we head into preseason. That's a good gauge to explain what NFL teams have on their board. As they start to look at what they have in terms of grades, how they like their roster, where they think they're going to be maybe a little strong, hopefully, or maybe a little weak, compared to what other teams and programs have, other teams, organizations have, where they may be strong, where they may be a little weak. So if you've got a surplus of players, one team does, you can begin to look and see where you might be able to add to your roster. This is a time of year where you not only try to fill out your roster, but you try to upgrade your roster. There is a distinct advantage if you evaluate players correctly on other people's teams. And the preseason games is when you do it, and you combine that with your college scouting evaluation of the player, you can upgrade your roster. Folks, I can't stress enough. You build a roster from the bottom up, okay? So much is focused on who's the starting this or that. You're really missing everything if you don't pay attention to how the game is played. The depth factor, the rotation factor. If you're not building your roster from 53 on up and getting the right 53 and getting a chance to improve, maybe it's the last three guys on your roster. If you can improve, you can get three guys from on somebody else's team that are better for you than the last three guys on your roster, and you don't do it because, oh, maybe it's easier to coach the guys that we already have, and they're a little bit more in tune with the system, and you bypass better players, you're going to pay for it in the end. That's where championship teams are built, are the ones that are very versatile in their coaching, very adaptable in their coaching, and understand how to match personnel with coaching. And so this time of year is not just about who you're going to keep on your roster, but who you're going to add to your roster off of somebody else's team. Well, how do you do that? Again, you send your scouts out to all these preseason games. Everyone will write reports. Combine it with looking at the film. Combine it with the college evaluations that you made with the guy coming in. And you make that determination of where you want to go. And we'll get into closer towards cutdown day of the strategy of who you cut and who you keep later on. But something to keep in mind as we get closer and closer to this process, which begins now, first preseason games. It actually is, it's a process of not just evaluating your roster. When you evaluate your roster, you're evaluating how guys are doing in meetings, how they're doing in practice, how they're doing in scrimmages, then how they're doing in preseason games, all of it combined. When you're evaluating other teams' players, you only know how they've done in a scrimmage if you've had a scrimmage against another team. You don't know how they're doing in practice. You have to judge off of what you grade on him coming out of college and what he does in preseason. So it's an important part of the evaluation process. It may be boring to watch, and it may not resemble what you watch come September. I get it. But what you watch in September and what you watch in November and what you have to go turn to on your roster is going to be directly tied to what you see in the preseason. And I'm not talking about, oh, this guy's good. He gained a bunch of yards. He scored 2 touchdowns. We're talking about the guy's skill sets and how he match up, because the production may be the byproduct of doing it against weaker competition. A third, you know, a running back may look great as a backup, but he's doing it against the second, third team defense. So he may look better. Is how explosive does he look compared to the frontline guys? Those are the things that you need to uncover and unearth during preseason. Got a question, couple questions. Richard asked, what was your assessment of Mike Nolan as a coach? Known Mike Nolan for years. Coached with him at LSU for a year. Bill Ansbacher hired him. Son of Dick Nolan. Grew up around football. Really good coach. Really good teacher. You know, Mike actually coached on defense most of his career and actually coached on offense as well. Really bright coach. I think he's outstanding. I think he brings great value to every staff that he's been on. Good teacher. And I think, experience-wise, would be somebody I'd be interested in as a head coach. If I felt like that was where he wanted to go and he had the energy to take on that role, just because a guy has the ability doesn't mean that he wants to take on the energy that it takes to do that job. And Mike knows intimately what it takes to do that job. What was your scouting evaluation of Ty Law out of Michigan? A big physical zone corner that could play press, could tackle, good zone awareness, and could cover well in zone more than in man. Was, again, a guy that was going to be a little bit limited in deep thirds coverage, a little bit limited in turn and run coverage, but really played with good technique. And was very, very bright. And obviously, you know, thought he'd be a really good player. People ask me all the time, did you know so-and-so was going to be a Hall of Famer? You never know if somebody's going to be a Hall of Famer. Okay, you never think in terms of that. You look at it in terms of these guys have a lot of ability. They have a lot of potential. They could be really good players at the NFL level. But there are so many things that take place, that have to take place for somebody to be a Hall of Famer, that it's really foolhardy to even think along those lines. But Ty was outstanding, and I mention that because I had a player in Kevin Mawai that I recruited in college that made it to the Hall of Fame, was inducted this past weekend. And no, you don't think in terms of that, and that doesn't mean that you don't trust their ability, but being the Hall of Fame, it requires a lot of things to go your way, and there's a lot of people, quite frankly, that have the ability, but is there going to be the good fortune, the circumstances that are around them, the health, and a lot of things that go into it. But in terms of character, in terms of ability, there are a lot of guys that fall into that category, and even they sometimes fall short due to circumstances, some of them completely beyond their control. All right, going to get in to pass rush, and again, if you haven't kept up with our X's and O's series, we encourage you to go back and listen to it. Maybe take one per day, go position by position. We quarterback play, running back play, you know, the running game, blocking up front, you know, everything we've covered, receivers, route running, play calls. It'll give you a better understanding of the game as you, and I think help you enjoy the game a lot more during the season. We move on to pass rush. Any pass rush, guys having great get off and speed, that's great. But any pass rush requires more than one move. One-dimensional pass rushers are going to be neutralized at the highest level of college football and certainly the NFL. No matter how talented they are in that one dimension, you can't be a successful pass rusher in the NFL without at least two ways to beat your blocker. You know, for example, I drafted Javon Kearse, and if it wasn't for his play as a rookie, we don't go to the Super Bowl in Tennessee. And early in the season, it's all we did. Let him pin his ears back. He didn't have a pass rush move, and he had early success. But people adjusted to him, and he had to develop that pass rush move. So we started early on to give him an alternate pass rush move so that when people sat on his speed, he could develop that crossover move. And he did it, and that's why he was so successful. But, you know, he didn't win on the speed rush all the time. He had to develop that. And Jim Washburn was the guy responsible for teaching him that and made him basically – he was a MVP-type candidate that year. Was outstanding. There are four basic pass rushes that you're going to see, certainly in today's NFL and major college football. The speed rush, it's a pass rush, has to be able to get off the ball and beat his blocker on the edge. This is a mandatory skill because in the NFL, a speed rush is also a contain rush. See, it positions the end outside the tackle, which keeps the quarterback from escaping the outside edge, and that's an increasingly important jobs as quarterbacks are coming more mobile. So when we're talking about beating a guy to the edge, it's not just to get upfield. It's to play contain. Because if you don't beat the guy to the edge, then the outside contain is not secure. Second is the bull rush. It's a simple power against power, mass against mass, strength against strength. The rusher needs to get his pads lower than the blocker's pads. He needs to get his hands inside his blocker's hands. Then he can power rush his man right back into the quarterback. Third, crossing the face. A defender will start with a speed rush, but on his third step, he'll cut back across the face of the blocker and go inside. Basically, he's luring the blocker into stepping outside to take away the angle of a speed rush, and the tackle moves laterally. The rusher cuts back into the opposite direction. This is what we taught Javon Kearse to do, to cross the face, the counter move. Okay, it's against disciplined blockers, it's a problem. Disciplined blockers stay on their imaginary line. In other words, a player who drops straight back instead of leaning towards the outside. That's the key to slowing down the cross-the-face move. Then the last thing we'll talk about is the conversion. This is the most popular and most effective technique in today's game, and it's what we call converting power to speed or speed to power. And you hear me talk about that. You can convert speed to power. The first move sets up the second. So most pass rushers prefer to convert speed to power. They sell the outside speed rush, and when the blocker widens to carry his rush past the pocket, the defender redirects right into the blocker's chest and bowls him back to the quarterback. So if you visualize it as that tackle gets wide to try to protect that edge, you now lose your base of strength. You may be 40 pounds heavier. But when you lose your balance, you're very easy to knock over because the bigger they are, the harder they fall. The bigger they are when they get out of balance, the easier they are to knock off balance. Then you come back, redirect into the chest, and the guy topples over. That's conversion of speed to power. Michael Strahan probably did that as good as anybody in modern time, but that is a staple. All good rushers do that. He probably did it the best. I know when I had John Runyon, drafting John Runyon, he was really good at trying at controlling the conversion, speed to power. And he did a really good job. But the matchups, when Runyon signed with the Eagles, the matchups between Runyon and Strahan are legendary. They're on my clinic tape of how to prevent and how to do it against a blocker. Just some of the best I've seen. Richard Dent was really, really good. Richard Dent was really a smart, instinctive rusher. And oftentimes he would probably set up pass rush moves as good as anybody. You know, what he would do, he'd wait. He'd basically set up a critical pass rush and a critical third down by how he rushed prior to that. So, you know, he might lull a tackle into a false sense of security by unleashing a speed rush after speed rush after speed rush. But then on third down, when a sack might knock a driving team out of field goal range or force a team to punt inside the end zone, he lets loose with a bull rush. Okay, and, you know, if he got the scouting report that says you can bull rush this tackle, he'd work your speed. And a crucial moment, you're expecting speed, and he bull rushes you. Because the reason is you've got a Brock speed, right? You're going to get a little wide. You lose your base a little, and boom, he comes off, hits you in the chest, and he beats you. Because you're expecting it. It's no different than as a route runner. You know, if you kind of bait as a defender, you bait your type of coverage and you get the receiver thinking that he's got one route open. When you got it covered, you're setting him up. It's no different from line play. There's a lot of things that you may not see and understand. So if you're watching a game like that, you might see, man, that tackle's really killing the defensive end. You know, the speed guy can't get by him. I saw it myself. Yeah, he was setting it up. The crucial moment, was he able to block up? Nope. The most critical moments, that makes a huge difference. And you often, when you see that, you can look at a lot of it on tape and see that the guy has a little bit more ability. Well, some of it says he's taking plays off as a rusher. Well, kind of. He's setting you up. So this is, again, an untrained eye is going to see what's there. But a trained eye is going to know what they're thinking. And that's what we're trying to point out, that there's what you see is not necessarily what it is. It's the result of something that they're doing to set up for later. And that has a lot to do with quarterback play, setting up defense, defenses setting up quarterback, receivers setting up a DB, defensive back setting up a receiver, as I just mentioned. So it's a lot of that goes on strategically that just gets by a lot of the media and fans. So, you know, the tackle will watch film of the opponent's strengths and weakness, and he will build a game plan of how to play him. We always, in modern day technology, coaches will build a tape that he makes his players go home and watch, and it's loaded up on the iPad. So the video staff will make a tape of the opponent that he's going to be going up against and anybody that he's going to match up against, where he will study that guy. And you know everything about, you know, how he stands, how he comes out of his stance, what's his first move, what's his second move, everything about the guy. So, you know, everything. How much weight does a rusher in a three-point stance have on his hand? Does his stance tip off which rush move he's going to use? The tackle may decide that an underside speed rusher is not strong enough to bull rush him, so he may overcompensate for the speed rush, inviting the end to try all the, you know, the power rush moves that he wants. Yeah, I want him to bull rush me because I don't think he can beat me with the bull rush. On the other hand, he might be able to beat me with the speed rush. So I'm going to overplay the speed knowing that I can still handle his bull rush. If you can't handle the bull rush, then you got to sit on the bull rush and you got to work hard, maybe even get some help to protect the edge. All things that you discern from your study of film and your feedback of how you feel about the teams that you're playing along with your position coach and your coordinator is the best way to go about blocking him. Or in the case of the defensive line, the best way to go about rushing him. So blockers counter rushers with their own variety of protection techniques. You don't necessarily block guys the same way. You know, you got to look at the quarterback's mobility or lack thereof. A mobile quarterback helps protect himself by limiting the options available in the pass rush. Against an athletic guy, the end must respect the threat of a scramble and therefore will stick to a speed rush that will contain the edge most of the time. Okay, you may watch the best pass rusher in the league go an entire game without getting a sack or any other pressure statistic, but it doesn't mean he didn't do his job. He prevented the quarterback from getting to the edge. So you're going to see this, you know, the folks where with the Pro Football Focus, oh, this guy didn't do anything, get any pressure. Well, they don't understand the game, and they don't understand the technique that's taught. I want my end against a mobile quarterback like a Russell Wilson or any mobile guy, certainly a Kyler Murray. I want him to rush the edge, and I don't care if he sacks the guy. I don't care if he pressures him. He has to rush the edge. He has to win the edge because you have to seal the edge. It's not his job to sack. If he falls into a sack, he falls into a pressure, great. But the minute he dips inside to try to get a pressure or a sack and he loses contain, it's 88 and out the gate. So to the untrained eye, boy, guy rushes. He didn't do anything. No sacks, no pressures, bad game. Now, he may have graded out as high as he's graded all year long in his assignment. But people don't understand that. You do now. You got to know when and now. If you're doing that against Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, you're not doing your job because those guys are not a threat to get outside. Against a mobile quarterback, that is definitely a plan of attack that could be used. So you look at the opposing quarterback. If he's a scrambler, the end may have to, you know, be told by the coaching staff to speed rush all game in order to reduce that pocket and take away the quarterback's window of escape. Then there are, again, guys like an Eli Manning. That against a stationary pocket guy, the defensive coaches are going to remove the contain responsibilities. They'll turn their outside rushers loose. It's called a two-way go, which is essentially a license for a defender to rush the quarterback with his full repertoire of moves. Okay. Obviously, this creates tremendous amount of stress on the tackle. He can't predict what's coming. He can't prepare for the probability of seeing a particular move in a certain situation. It's a competitive disadvantage. Even if an immobile quarterback can assist in his own protection by doing certain things, he can neutralize a speed rush by simply stepping up in the pocket. You know, Manning did it. Eli does it now. Peyton did it. Tom Brady does it. Step up in the pocket. He's not a running threat, but the tackle can carry the speed rush further upfield than the quarterback's back foot. And all he does, he knows where his back foot's going to be. So he rushes him wider than that, and all the quarterback's got to do is step up. Then the defender's taken out of the play. Understand the quarterback will help you understand the pass rush. Get that. Know the quarterback you're playing. What type is it? I always like to convert out of high school defensive linemen to the offensive side more than the other way. If a guy's athletic enough on defense and has the physical nature to tackle and handle hand fighting, can rush the passer, those guys will often translate very well to the offensive side. Offensive linemen that go on the defensive side don't translate very well. They're not athletic enough. You're not athletic enough to be on the offensive line. You're certainly not going to be on the defensive line. There's some exceptions. You may be a big power guy that can play two gap on defense. There's some exceptions to that. But I think finding a guy that maybe was a defensive lineman that moves over to guard or tackle, I like that. You bring a guy like that, particularly in a zone scheme, you bring the quickness, can be really effective. So, Bear Bryant only recruited one offensive lineman at Alabama. That was John Hanna. Now, most kids play offensive and defensive line, play both ways. But all of his offensive linemen were defensive linemen. A real tip there to look for. Going to talk a little bit about interior rushes. Interior linemen have one primary job, and that's to collapse the pocket. If they can collapse the pocket, there's nowhere for the quarterback to step up. You know, keeping him vulnerable longer to that speed rusher he otherwise would have evaded. Inside guys don't have the same menu of pass rush moves that the outside guys do. Outside guys, they're parts of their bodies that are free. A right defensive end lined up outside the tackle on the weak side won't have a blocker on his outside arm or leg. those first steps before contact keeps all his pass rush options open. Inside guys are lined up directly across from their blockers, so their body parts are all covered inside and outside. It forces them to be bull rushers first and foremost. Defensive tackles have to be able to square up and go power against power, driving their blockers backward until their heels are at the quarterback's toes. Okay, that's important. Not at the quarterback's heels, but to his toes. If you're to his heels, you can't get in his face. If you're to his toes, you can get into his grill and affect him even if you don't tackle him. The other thing you got to keep in mind, as you get pressure, you may not get to the quarterback. That's okay. You got to affect the play by getting your hands up. As soon as the quarterback takes his non-throwing hand off the ball, he makes up his mind where he's throwing the football. The pass rushers are watching both the quarterback's hands as they fight to get off their block. You see one hand come off the ball, the rusher must throw up his hands because you're not going to get to him, but you can get in his throwing lane. That's when you get your hands up and you can disrupt the pass. Bat it down, impair the vision. All those things are affecting the quarterback in a negative way. Even as bull rushers, interior linemen have to develop a repertoire of moves beyond what they had in college. Most guys come into the league proficient with the swim move. But in the NFL, an offensive lineman is going to wait for a defender to lift his arm in a swimming motion. Interior guys need to develop a rip move. They need to use the first step quickness, which is a key trait for defensive tackles in a 4-3. They got to get their hands under the pads of the guard or the center he's facing. Once he can get to the heel, when he gets his heels next to the blocker's heels, he's beating his man, can go after the quarterback. Some defensive tackles are such dominating bull rushers, they can move outside to defensive end in obvious pass rushing situations. So you can look at the two Giants teams that beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. They did that with Justin Tuck. Instead of lining up head-to-head against a blocker and having their options limited, the converted ends will shade a bit. They'll line up on the outside shoulder of the guard, not straight across from him. The guard will have to step up out to protect the B-gap. Then the end is threatening to bull rush, though, which makes him vulnerable to the cross-the-face move. You also see teams get everyone on the line involved by running a line stunt. For example, you might see a defensive end take two hard steps upfield, sell the offensive tackle on an outside speed rush. That draws the tackle out and vertical back, expanding the B-gap, and gives the defensive tackle room to penetrate between the guard and the widened tackle. As soon as the defensive tackle is inside that gap, the end plants his cleats, cuts back across the blocker's face, and shoots into the B-gap. As tight to his teammate's backside as possible. Defenders are looking for the shortest distance to 2 points. That's a straight line. The bigger the loop, the more time the quarterback has to react. Whether it's a stunt or a straight rush, the battle that goes in the direction of the trenches on every play provides some of the best action that you're going to watch. Do yourself a favor. Take your eye off the football and watch the play at the line of scrimmage. It'll take you and teach you more about the game just by watching that. A pass rusher may get 500 chances to rush the passer over the course of the season. If he gets 10 sacks, he's had a great year. He's a star. You got to look at pressures and other things affecting the quarterback. But if he gets sacks, he's a star. If a pass blocker gets 500 chances to protect the quarterback and he gives up 10 sacks, he's going to be replaced by somebody else. So there's a lot at stake, but it's going to determine how successful you can be by your play up front. I want to talk a little bit as we finish up today about the fire zone blitz. And it's simple math. It creates big problems, but defenses are always looking for new ways to bring pressure. And Dick LeBeau was really the innovator of the fire zone blitz. The fire zone is different from the blitzes we saw in the early days where it left defenses susceptible to the big play. You saw that a lot. Joe Namath made a living beating the blitz with a bomb. But LeBeau came up with an idea. Look, we're going to bring pressure, but we're not going to put ourselves in completely vulnerable situations. There's some vulnerability when you bring more guys. You got less guys in coverage. It's pure math. But we got ways that we can camouflage it and ways that we can cover it up a little bit. Not always with man. So LeBeau's innovation was to make opponents waste its best blocker. So in the 3-4 scheme that the Steelers ran with Dick, and then when he went to Cincinnati, he took it there, one of the best outside backers came on the blitz on every play. So on a fire zone call, one of the rushers jumps at the tackle as if he were a blitzer. Simultaneously, another linebacker or defensive back blitzes from somewhere else. Then that first rusher suddenly stops his forward progress and drops back into coverage. As a result, the tackle, often the left tackle and the team's best pass blocker, is left with no one to block. The man he was assigned to block one-on-one is no longer rushing, and it's too late for him to pick up the man who is. Schematic advantage. It's a system that paralyzes your best blocker, gets hit on the quarterback, and because it's played under a three-dip zone, doesn't allow the deep ball. It's no wonder everybody in the league kind of adopted it, even 4-3 teams. Jim Johnson, the legendary late defense coordinator of the Eagles, found a way to do this with his defensive end. LeBeau did it with his outside backer. Jim did it with the defensive end. Began every play with his hand on the ground. Would stab at the tackle, then drop into coverage, taking the tackle out of the play. Meanwhile, a blitzer was coming through another gap that would likely be picked up by a running back, if at all. So by covering up the tackle, by taking him out of the play, and you do that defensively, you try to take a back or receiver out of the play or a tight end out of the play, don't you? Why not take a tackle out of the play? Well, how do you do that? Put your best rusher, attack him, back off of it, and have another blitzer come in. He can't block that guy because it's too late, and he's not blocking your guy who's dropping into a zone coverage. So just by dropping a linebacker or an end into a zone blitz look, he may not be covering a back or a tight end, but he's covering an area that is usually going to be the hot read for the quarterback, and you've got a body in that spot making it difficult to complete that pass or having success if you do complete the pass. So you remember we talked a little bit about playing an extra defensive end at tackle on passing downs. Well, when the Giants had Strahan and Kiwanuka and Justin Tuck and Umanura, that remember that NASCAR package? Well, what they would do is take Tuck and slide him inside down the tackle, and then he'd have that tackle drop and blitz a linebacker instead. A man the guard would usually miss. And now you got penetration up the middle. Blitzing is about simple math. The defense is sending one more player than the protection is able to block. The fire zone takes it a step further. It convinces the lineman that he's blocking the right man and sets another man free. You can see the math at work the start of every play. Before the snap, count the number of defenders in the box who may be rushing. That's what the quarterback and the offensive line are doing. So you can do that too. The defense is almost always going to try to make them count one more than their personnel will allow them to block. You see it all the time. Linebacker showing blitz but then backpedaling. Or safety sneaking down in the box before scrambling back into position. That kind of sugaring a little bit, we like to call it, is designed to create mismatches in the offense's math. The fire zone doesn't tip its hand because the fire zone can replace any of the rushers. The offense no longer can count the four down linemen in a 4-3 coming with any certainty. The problem is that they have to prepare to block them as if they are. Otherwise, they're letting a guy come straight into the backfield with a clean shot on the quarterback, something you cannot afford to do. If an offense is in 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, you have seven men to protect the quarterback. The defense might show eight men in the box, but the offense has no idea if they're all coming. If the defense does send them all, someone is coming unblocked. If the pressure doesn't result in a sack, it's likely to force the quarterback into a bad decision, which is just as good as a sack or a pressure, folks. If you're sitting in the stands or at home watching your team get beat with the fire zone, start watching where the dropper goes after he drops into coverage. Remember, in a 4-3 front, that guy is probably a lineman, so playing in coverage is not one of his strengths. Even if he's athletic enough to cover a receiver, he's going to be getting to his zone a little bit late. You know, even if you've got a guy, and we see these guys today that can really run, but they're not receiver athletic. So they're not going to get into the zone in time. So he has to sell the tackle on his rush first, which necessarily means he'll be late in his coverage. So you're not going to see him be real effective. But if you can just get in the way and kind of paralyze and force him to hold the ball for half a second, it might be effective enough. So the three deep zone that you play with this in the secondary, compounded by the defender coming free on the blitz, makes it really difficult to make a big play against the fire zone. But an offense can complete short passes against it, okay, especially if you can get the receiver beating the dropper to the zone. But you've got to beat it with the short passes, which is why you've got to be a good tackling defense in the fire zone, because you're going to have to defend a lot of short passes. So those are things that I want you to be on the lookout for with the fire zone. So, look, I mean, bringing pressure and disguising pressure, bringing pressure used to be the way to go. Today you can't bring pressure. You've got to bring disguised pressure. So, you know, you really got to create a lot of problems in the offensive line's numbers on who they're going to block, and you've got to bring a lot more guys than they have to block, and you've got to disguise where they're coming from. That's really the key to rushing the passer. Those are the different pass rush moves. Those are the different schemes that you want to run in terms of stunts and vacating positions to get better angles. And those are the looks of blitz pressure and how it's disguised differently. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an idea in terms of a pass rush. So we were able to get that for you. We're going to get into coverage a little bit and how defensive backs do their job. We're working your way through the entire position, offense and defense. We'll get to the secondary and how they do things on the back end of the defense on the Thursday edition of the Landry Football Podcast. So spread the word. What we're doing here and what we're doing on LandryFootball.com is where you can catch this podcast, all the podcasts, all the film room breakdowns, all the news, notes, and nuggets in our notebooks every day, all our film room grades, all our player grades, depth chart analysis, game previews, reviews. You're going to get all of that at LandryFootball.com. And now for a new low price, if you could take advantage of the year special. So take advantage of that today. And we'll see you. Got a question? Send it right here, and we'll address it here in the podcast. We appreciate you joining us, as always. Listen, to make this work, we need your support. We need you to spread it around to people. And we certainly, if there's anybody out there that you know that might be interested in growing their business, give me a call or give me a shout on email, and I will forward it to the right folks to get involved. That is the key to keeping this podcast going. If you like it, you got ways that you can support it without costing you anything. If you can get people that will support us from a advertising standpoint, we'd very much appreciate it. We're trying a lot of different podcasts and hoping that you're enjoying it, giving you good feedback. But that's the key to making this work. We appreciate you joining us. Talk to you again next time on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
As the scales of summer slowly tip towards the fall and the Major League Baseball trade deadline is behind us, we're going to talk about the personal side of player moves, because there's a human element we often overlook. And as the fall approaches, our eyes are turning to hockey. Do you have a plan? If you're a serious player, coach, parent, or an administrator, we're going to have a very interesting talk with NHL certified player agent Manny Schmidt from Link Management International as we talk player planning this week on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.